it's Monday the 15th of April. I'm Miranda Sawyer and I programmed Grimes' DJ set at Coachella. Welcome back to Paper Cuts, the modern newspaper review, where every day we give the UK press a lovely little glow-up. Yes, we highlight their best features and hide the less cute. Actually, we often highlight those too. We let the papers be their authentic selves, but we lipo out the boring bits and slather the rest in tinted body oil with fabulous results. Spring has sprung and everything seems a tiny bit more cheerful, so why not spread the good times to three of your friends by sending them a message with a link to papercutshow.co.uk and tell them why you like us. Who knows why? Let's see if they subscribe. Now, here are the headlines for today's show. Brink think Israel is deciding whether to attack Iran and start World War III. Live forever, tech bros are convinced that their weird fitness regimes means they'll never die. And public house, squatters take over Gordon Ramsay's bar and won't move out. Welcome to Paper Cuts. We read the papers so you don't have to. Thanks for joining us on Paper Cuts, where we don't want the football season to be over, but we worry that it is. I'm Miranda Sawyer, and joining me today is co-host of Pod Save the UK and festival snob, she'll only go if it's in the south of France, it's Coco Khan. Hi, Coco.
Bonjour, Miranda.
And also with us is writer of bedtime stories for privileged children and wilderness wild man, it's Daniel Fox. Hi, Daniel.
Hello.
So, look, what have we got on the front pages today? I think we've only got one thing for you, haven't we, Coco?
Yes. So across all the broadsheets today, it's talking about this situation with Israel and Iran. So on the front page of The Guardian, you've got US warning as Israel weighs up response to Iran's attack. On the Daily Telegraph, we've got Israel plans revenge attack on Iran as West urges restraint. On the front page of The Times, it's Israel vows revenge as the world calls for calm. And on The Eye, it's Iran risks an uncontrollable wider war with Israel attacks, G7 nations warn.
Oh dear. Okay. Have we got anything lighter over there, Daniel, in the fun papers?
No is the answer. But largely, the Sun has gone with RAF Top Guns foil Iran blitz. The Mirror has gone with half of that is to do with the incoming war, and the other half is to do with Sheridan still smiling.
Oh, well, that's good.
Sheridan Smith is smiling despite her latest play closing. The Daily Mail is going with the war stuff as well, and also a lovely picture of Hannah Waddingham at the Olivier's, dressed in a lovely dress.
Beautiful.
And the Daily Star is also going with the very, very important stuff, drawing attention to the fact that the millionaire who's making the Titanic 2 is going to put a few more lifeboats on it. So that's sort of crucial news. And then there is literally like a post-it note sized little bit in the corner about also we're on the brink of World War III, but the Titanic...
The new Titanic
is being made. I also just want to draw attention to their thought of the day, which is a very generous term, which says, the Pope's never watched a Gogglebox. That's a sin. That's someone's job.
Yeah,
we respect it. That sounds like the job I want.
Yeah, coming up with that.
That's like a great job.
Thought of the day.
Now, on the front page of every paper, as we've seen, is the frankly terrifying story about the possible fallout from Iran's attack on Israel very late on Saturday night, Sunday morning. Step back from the brink, says the Mirror. Even the Star has on brink of World War III. Coco, what is going on? Is this the end of the world?
Well, if it is, it's not yet.
OK, thanks.
So that's a relief of sorts.
Maybe we can have a hot girl summer.
And then... So look, the first thing to say is that Israel and Iran have been involved in a war for a while anyway, but it's a proxy war. So it normally happens in third countries, you know, strikes, assassinations in countries like Iraq and in Syria. And obviously Iran backs Hezbollah and Hamas and Israel are fighting those. So since October the 7th, the situation between those two has escalated. And then a few weeks ago, Israel did something that it had never done before, and it bombed an Iranian embassy in Syria. It killed some Iranian staff. Now, the way that it works with embassies is that they are considered sovereign territory of the country they represent. So this was essentially, even though it happened in Syria, this was a direct attack rather than being considered a proxy attack. Now, analysts have said that this was a crossing of lines, that this proxy war between them is usually carried out through some unwritten rules that they know about. And this was a misjudgment and a step too far. So then Over the weekend, Iran returned with something that it hasn't done before, and it directly attacked Israel, launching hundreds of drones and missiles. Now, Israel knew it was coming through US intelligence. And so with help from the US, France, the UK, Jordan and Saudi Arabia, Israel were able to shoot most of the missiles down. So the Iranians now say the matter is closed. That's that. And analysts have said that if they did really want to escalate things, they could have attacked in different ways, presumably ways that would be harder to thwart. So essentially, Iran wanted to show a response, and now they've done it. The question that is hanging over everyone's head this morning is whether Israel are going to respond. Mm. Are they going to escalate and directly attack Iran, which is very scary, or will they hit back via proxy attacks? I think the thing that I find interesting is that both Iran and Israel face quite significant pressure at home. Mm. And it's like a tale as old as time, right? Use war to bring the country together or get behind a government that they would otherwise be criticising. It's horrible to say that there's value for governments in war, but I mean, that is often how they perceive it. Yeah. The only thing I would say as a final point on this is that contrary to the World War III headlines, this isn't as bad as it could have been. And I think also it's important to say that we're talking about Israel and Iran here, but we should keep eyes on Gaza, because as long as there's not a ceasefire in Gaza, there is a risk of very scary things happening. And so I think it's really important that everybody keeps their eyes on that.
Yeah. I mean, Biden does seem to say, OK, this is it, doesn't it? That's it. Calm down. Take the win, which I think is quite like an interesting. It's so sports analyst. Do you know what I mean? It's like, okay, take the win, you won. So it does seem to like that if they did decide to attack, it would be very difficult situation, wouldn't it? Because the US would say, we really don't want to join in.
I don't really know what the US would think. And I think that's what's scary about it. And I think, you know, if you were Israel and you were being strategic, you might say, they have to come in on our side. If we create this situation, we have to. Mm. I'm not convinced that like there is no situation in which the US couldn't be drawn in.
Yeah, okay.
And that may well be a calculation that's taking place here. It's hard to say. Mm.
Thanks for that, Coco.
Well, also, the other thing I would just say, in amidst this doom and gloom, is that, you know, there has been a lot of conversation about Britain's involvement. Yeah. And I would be interested to see what happens this week in terms of that. So particularly after the killing of the British aid workers, there's definitely been stronger than I think I've seen. Anyway, a sense that Britain needs to consider not selling arms to Israel and also definitely push further for a ceasefire. Might that continue to happen? We don't really know. So, I'm interested to see what happened this week and what Starmer's going to say and what Sunak's going to say.
Okay.
And I would just like to add, if there are any Ministry of Defence officials listening, if and when there is a draft, I would probably be well suited for something in sort of a cooking department, maybe sort of haikus. I have a really nice handwriting, so sort of writing invitations, that sort of thing, yeah, would be great for me.
Okay. Yeah. I think they'll hear that.
I'm thinking so.
Now, over the weekend in The Times, we were delighted to discover that a whole bunch of science bros have discovered various foolproof ways that they're going to make men, and it does seem to be very specifically men, live forever. Well, Daniel, this is very exciting, isn't it?
Oh, I'm so excited to live forever. It's sort of... what happens when men move into the self-help space, I think, is wellness 2.0 is what they're calling it. And it's a lot of kind of bro science, bro podcasters. They all seem to have been former tech billionaires, millionaires, who then sell their company, they get divorced, and then they start trying to live forever and are almost like competing with each other to make wild claims about, A, how long they're going to live for, and what morning routines and sort of crazy health fads they're doing to get there. The language around it is all very masculine, very boardroom gym vibes of like using the word protocol rather than routine or exercise
or habit.
Habit, yeah, exactly right. Talking about like mindfulness, but as like a tool, as if they're talking about cordless drills or angle grinders. It's basically like wellness 1.0, which is Gwyneth.
Yeah.
Doing.
And Gwyneth, I mean, Gwyneth, there was kind of fun to Gwyneth,
fun.
Wasn't
it was
there?
Theatre. It was like, joy, it was steaming your vagina and drinking a smoothie made of like iguanas or whatever. Whereas this is like so boring. It is, what was that? Who was the actor? Mark Wahlberg.
Yeah, yeah.
Who was like, I wake up at 4 a.m. and I freeze my balls. And then I like, it's so lame.
It's, I mean, you know, there are a lot of these people, though. I mean, in this article, there's one that I'd heard of before. So he is this guy. His name is Brian Johnson. I've seen him before. Mm. So he is one of these tech millionaires. He sold his company. So now he's got 800 million.
Yep.
Doesn't quite know what to do with it. And so he's decided not to die. Like,
oh, he's literally not going to die.
That says don't die. But he, the main thing I remember about him is he gets blood transfusions from his teenage son.
Poor son.
That is unbelievable.
Isn't it literally like sucking the life out of his kids?
It's so vampiric.
And you can find like photos of him where he's like, look how good I look now. And it's like, you look terrifying. He looks like one of the creatures in Lord of the Rings that's being like corrupted. There's a waxiness to them. They all look, well, firstly, they all look very much their age.
Yeah.
They're all like late 40s, mid 50s, and they're all saying like, I've reduced my biological age to 23. And it's like, you look late 40s, mid 50s with a bit of Botox.
Yeah, a lot of kind of like shiny faces.
A sheen. There's like a Cliff Richardness to them all.
There really is.
That Brian Johnson one, he also does a thing of, he wears like a thing that measures how many erections he has at night.
Oh, wow. What does he do with this information?
It's just information to track how sort of youthful his system is.
What he does is he ages every part of his body. So he'll kind of go, okay, my heart is 32. So he's obviously aging his dick.
Wow.
And he's kind of like saying, no, my penis has the, you know, an age of 17.
Yeah.
And is it just that the younger the better?
Yeah.
Or is there a sense that like actually a good penis is 26, good heart is 18?
For them, I think it's all younger the better.
It's younger
all,
the better.
It all seems to be just metrics for bragging rights for ugly men who work in recruitment and private equity. That seems to be the vibe.
Yeah.
I would love to make a plea for divorced men to please, please go back to repairing classic cars, turning sheds into pubs, and not either taking seaweed enemas or becoming Lawrence Fox. I would love if we could like go back a few steps. It is really just a classic irony in this world that the people who are able to try and make themselves live forever are the ones you would least want living forever. Are they?
So
like,
much so. They have these really weird words as well. With one of them, Dave Asprey, he says he's going to live to 180.
Yeah.
And actually think that's a bit boring and easily achievable.
Yeah.
But he's had more stem cells injections than anyone else out there.
What a brag.
Right. Well, I mean, great. Wow. Well done. But he has an upgraded brain, apparently. And this is what he says. He says, I take controls of systems for a living, and human beings are simply meat operating systems.
Oh my God.
You know he's looked into the eyes of some poor fucking woman on a date and said exactly that, and
oh
she's
my
had
God,
to consider
can
like
you
her.
Imagine?
He was the one who made bulletproof coffee. Did you ever try that?
I did try that.
Coffee like blended with butter or coconut.
Yeah, it's disgusting.
It is just, I mean, it really cleans you out because it's just a shortcut to pissing out of your ass. Like it is. The most disgusting oil slick to be drinking.
Yeah.
One thing that I found is that it very much is targeting and appealing to sort of young professional men, I think. Mm. And there's like some validity into this idea that like there are a lot of men and boys in their sort of 20s to 30s who are spending their time, but also women, by the way, but these just target the boys, who are hunched over screens for hours on end, sitting down, staring at a thing, and need some sense of like purpose in their lives. And these men are very much preying on that.
Yeah.
And the article does make the very, and or someone within it makes a very good point that like, there are like 4 or 5 great things you can do for yourself, which is like getting a nice amount of sleep.
Yeah. Yes.
Going, being social.
Yeah. Make some friends.
Eating some fiber, drinking a bit of water. And those things are great for you. But repeating those 4 things doesn't make for sexy podcasting.
No.
Whereas what these guys do is just find a new
I
thing every week.
I feel quite bad now because I occasionally listen to Andrew Huberman like to fall asleep.
Oh, well.
Oh, my God. Yeah. And what does he tell you?
Well, it's very one note. Not like us. We go up, we go down. Yeah. We go serious, we go funny. Not him. He's just at one level the whole time.
What is it?
I
one
once
level
listened
is
to
like
100 minutes of him talking about ketamine. You might think that's a fun subject, might you? Oh, no. Absolutely not. Straight to bed.
I'm David Baddiel. I'm a writer and a comedian and a Jew.
I'm Saeeda Varsi. I'm a businesswoman and a politician and a Muslim.
Jews and Muslims always seem to be in the news or on the news. Lots of people talk about us, and this is us talking about ourselves.
The kind of things that people say don't touch, we are going to go there.
I mean, I think Jews and Muslims are talking about these things, but I think they're not talking about them together because they're worried that if they do, sparks might fly. A Muslim and a Jew go there.
Find us wherever you get your podcasts. Now it's time for Fix the Headline, where we search out a headline in the papers that is failing to show up for its story. And then we get you, our lovely Papercuts listeners, to think up a better one. On Friday, we found you a story from the Daily Mail. It informed us that boffins from the University of Illinois have found that if you want to stay out of jail, you need to hire an attractive lawyer. Their headline, which was rubbish, was, "Want to win your case? Get a beautiful barrister." We knew you could do better, and you did. On X, Dave Martin had a couple of goes. His first was Beauty and the Briefs, very good, and Objectification, Your Honour, also excellent. Unpopcult gave us a pretty straightforward sex appeal, and Polonius, Sexy Briefs Will Get You Off. On Threads, I can't pronounce this, let's have a go. Wiglia B had a go with You Are Lawful, But I Like You. Main Tenant Music tried with Sirens in Court, and Alice Antonsen with If She's Fit, You Must Acquit. But the winner is Joe Short with the frankly incredible I Fought the Four and the Four Won. Hooray! Just send us your address and t-shirt size, Joe, and we'll send you a fabulous and highly elite Paper Cuts t-shirt. Okay, what about today, Coco? Do we have any good headlines? What have you got?
So, I can't believe I'm saying this, but we're going to the Times.
Wow.
Hello. And we've got a very interesting little story deep from the world of academia, where great rivalries are made. And it's about Shakespeare. So Shakespeare, for a long time, people have wondered whether he wrote all 38 plays. And now one of the country's bastions of intellectualism has triggered a fresh row by hosting an American literary critic who says the bard may have actually been a woman. And the headline the Times have gone with is Critics Doth Protest Over Female Bard.
Okay, very good. Critics doth protest.
And then over in The Star, a place we can always depend on, we have a piece about the tycoon rebuilding the Titanic. And the headline is No Ship Sherlock.
No ship Sherlock, okay.
And then one from yesterday in the Sunday Star. It was quite a sweet story. It's about how football fans like to wear their team's socks in bed. It gives them more confidence and they feel they perform better. And the headline is Footy Fetish.
Footy Fetish. I feel like we should tell the tech bros, right?
Yeah, I think they're all over that already.
Daniel, what do you have?
So in the Sun, we've got, okay, this one is about how Heinz has launched a limited edition barbecue mayonnaise in its lurid pink in honour of Barbie.
Lovely.
Which I think they first floated online as sort of a funny idea, along with a tomato ketchup. And they are calling it classic barbecue, mayo barbecue sauce. And The Sun is titled this, Great Day for a Barbie.
Oh, love it. That's
like.
Good.
Yeah,
it's very good.
And then we have one about how Take That is going back on tour. The song goes behind the scenes with Gary, Mark and Howard as this life tour kicks off, which they have called Delight My Fire.
So it's going well.
It sounds like it's going well. And then we have a story about a dad who has picked up a bit of a rubbish hobby, photographing and rating local bins.
Oh my
Andy
God.
Bailey has snapped nearly 100 and posted them on Instagram, which Joe Lycett also did and made like a coffee table book of it. Bins are in right now. But they have titled this The Binfluencer.
Beautiful.
Very nice.
I like that.
The name
Very
I used good. To dance under.
Now, in the papers, there has been quite a few stories about a new Gordon Ramsay venture. Actually, it's an old venture. It's his York and Albany pub, which is at the top of Camden Parkway, just before Regent's Park. Pub spotters. It's got some new owners. Coco, who are they?
Well, they are a bunch of squatters. Five men and one woman, to be precise. Basically, Gordon Ramsay owns the lease on this pub. He's unfortunately got himself into arrears on it, not least because it is £640,000 a year and it was a 25-year lease. So He's obviously looking to sell that on. In the meantime, the pub's been closed and some squatters have moved in. They've glued the locks. They've boarded themselves in using kitchen appliances. Talk about insult to injury. Apparently, the Times has a quote saying they're cooking up a storm in the kitchen, which is especially galling for Gordon.
Poor Gordon.
Poor old Gordon. So the police won't go in because it's a civil matter. Apparently, occupation of someone's non-residential property is in itself not a crime. Didn't know that.
Yeah, I know. I think interesting because squatting generally has been like legislated against. So it used to be when I first moved to London, actually all over the country, there was a lot of squatting going on. But you can't do that now if it's a residential house. But if it's something like that, you can do it as long as you don't damage it.
I feel like you know a strange amount about this.
Everybody used to do it. You know, people did used to do it quite a lot, but you can't. You can't do it now unless it's that kind of property. So they're in.
So they're in. And unless they damage it or apparently steal from it, then there's nothing that the police can do.
Yeah.
Now that, you know, we might feel sorry for Gordon. But what I would just say, and we should feel sorry for Gordon. I don't know. I'm conflicted. I'm sorry. I'm working through my feelings right now.
It's okay. This is a safe space.
Well, the thing about Gordon Ramsay is he's my go-to guy on a YouTube tutorial.
Right.
Is he really?
Yeah, if honestly.
Ooh, look at Daniel's face.
Wow.
Listen, okay, I accept that there's
Nigella being referenced here, but that's fine.
Nigella is not good for a tutorial.
Oh, okay, I'm out.
Nigella is, you know, a work of art. You can appreciate it, but if you want to know how to cut an onion, you need the intensity, the
completely
strange intensity
disagree.
Of Gordon Ramsay, who will stare at you through the screen into your soul and speak in that panting way.
I would say you want Mark Appiah White. I don't think Gordon Ramsay's good on either venture, personally.
Anyway, so the squatters are setting up a cafe. It's called the Camden Art Cafe, and it's for the homeless. So when they're not squatting there, they're doing kind of wider outreach work, which, you know,
yeah, and
is
they're
really
going to do
needed.
It from, apparently, they're going to do it from the York and Albany.
From the, okay.
Yeah. And like, I feel like it's a real sort of Daily Mail vibe of how they're trying to spin it because they are squatters, they're using the squatters' law stuff, but they're also kind of activists, aren't they? Like, they've taken a disused pub where Gordon's not paid the lease in years and owes a load of money. And they are giving away free food to the homeless. I also really love, did you see the photos? I loved reading this where it's like, someone's like put a camera to the window and like taken a photo through to be like, look at the mess
they live.
Which is always the classic when it's like a story about squatters. But when you look at the photo, it's like quite clean. And there's literally like a few coffee cups and there's like a extension cable with a few iPhone plugs in it. And they're like, when they list, they're like, the premise was littered with items including plugs, empty water bottles and a wine glass. Like, that describes like most adults' bedrooms.
And that's the end of today's Paper Cuts. Thanks to Coco.
Thank you.
Thanks to Daniel.
Thank you.
Remember, if you fancy listening to the show with no ads and with a special extra story, then why not join the Papercut Supporters Club? Go to back.papercutshow.com. The link is in the show notes. And all our supporters get a special shout out.
It's hello and you're looking well, Rachel Merritt.
It's hi and, oh, I love your new top, Rosemary Bennett.
It's hiya and that's a stunning haircut, Aaron Howe. I've been Miranda Sawyer and you've been listening to Paper Cuts on a day when the Pope has revealed he hasn't watched telly for 35 years. It's bad for his heart, he said after he witnessed a racy scene in 1990. But Popey Blind Date is coming back with Claudia Winkleman. Get back in the game. See you tomorrow.
Paper Cuts was written and presented by Miranda Sawyer with Daniel Fox and Coco Khan. The producer was Liam Tate with assistant production by Adam Wright. Audio production and music was by me, Simon Williams. Socials were by Kieran Leslie. The group editor was Andrew Harrison. The managing editor was Jacob Jarvis and the executive producer was Martin Boytosh. Paper Cuts is a Podmasters production.